Blog Talk Radio.
Well, howdy, kids. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host tonight for the hostile takeover of Wrestling Night in America. Normally the host of PWT Talks NXT. Tonight we will be talking NXT Takeover 36, which just ended about 5 to 10 minutes ago. Yes, a fairly compact show, 2 hours and 28 minutes on a show that I thought with a couple of these matches easily could go 3 or even 3.5. So, relieved at the length and compact nature of this show. What is NXT tomorrow? That's, I think, what everybody really wants to know right now. But for tonight, we got Takeover. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. If you want to get a hold of us and talk to us on this show, that is 515-605-9345. And if you want a queue, then just hit that one. And email us tonight at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, because that is the one we have access to. If you email Greg, we won't get it because I have not figured out his password, even though I'm trying all the time. Let's talk main event, Samoa Joe versus Karrion Kross. Now, a lot of these matches could have main evented, I suppose. This one, I think, is the right choice because you're ending this championship reign of Karrion Kross, but stashing this right after Ilya Walter and Cole Kyle is just cruel indeed, given the things that they were able to pull off in that match. The winner in 12 minutes and 24 seconds is Samoa Joe. The audience, classy as always, chanted, "We want Scarlett," and then chanted Hardy, which was always going to be the worst part of bringing him up prematurely to the main roster and doing what they did, because they did not need to invite that problem upon them. This match was just kind of there, even on a show without those previous two matches, and really the previous four matches, because we had a pretty good show going here. This would have been just kind of okay. Kross is just what he is, and Joe's endurance isn't what it once was, although he can still do the crazy power stuff without seemingly a whole lot of effort, even though he's sweating from the word go once he gets in there. Let's talk main event. Tom Staupe, who are you? How are you? And go on.
How am I? I am exhausted from the tenor of the discourse from Friday and Saturday, but let's talk Sunday. I'm at Tom Staupe on Twitter. And I think ultimately, because, I mean, they gave Kross what they needed to, or, you know, they gave Kross something that he can be happy with in this one match. But I think because the finish was so definitive, I'll give this one a pass. Although I really, you know, the past couple weeks have been sort of whatever, but I think the real meat of this build was very effective. And that's not even with all of the implications surrounding it that we did finally get officially confirmed by Nick Khan. I've been referring to them as rumors up to this point, even though, you know, seems pretty valid, but he finally addressed impending changes, and they started using the future of our brand verbiage when promoting this match. So that is another reason why I feel this was indeed the rightful main event, no matter what came beforehand. Although I think that was, I think match order was otherwise an issue on the show, and we'll get to that. But yeah, I just felt like even with the good build, once the bell rang, I didn't feel the feud anymore. And that could be a Joe endurance thing. That could be Karrion Kross having, I mean, I think he was fine here, and I think he's been pretty darn good in his recent matches, but he's also been up against people like Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole. So having someone like a more tired seeming Joe in there, didn't make for a match that I felt was the payoff that I was looking for here. Like I would have taken a 5-minute explosion. I would have taken a Brock Goldberg here. But ultimately I think it's moving in the direction that they feel they need to go with it. And they, again, made that very definitive with that, that one muscle buster. So it does get a pass.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't have been surprised if this one was one of those Brock Lesnar specials that went under 6 minutes. So I guess for Cross's sake, a guy who can't handle too many more real bad beats coming his way for a minute, I would think. I thought that he might get less time here. I thought that this might get significantly less time. It was the shortest match on the show by a couple of seconds on a show that had 90 minutes of wrestling, just under 90 minutes of wrestling is where I got it clocked. But yes, I assume this is the end of his time there. I mean, if everything else is going to change, that might as well change now. But yes, I too wonder where Scarlett is, but I would not have chanted it in the arena. Nate, who are you?
I am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT, and hey, guys, I've already posted the hits and misses for TakeOver 36, so if you'd like to check out what I think before listening to the rest of the show, you could always do that, or just keep listening. As far as the main event goes, I'm not going to lie. I actually like this a little bit better than I thought I was going to. So last week, I was nervous when Joe came down to the ring, and he was super gassed by the time he got to the ring. He just looked gassed. He looked out of breath, and he hasn't looked all that great in the past few weeks that we've seen him out there anyway, at least, his endurance wise, which you guys are talking about. And that was clear tonight too. He looked like he was trying to catch his breath a few times. You kind of noticed he had like some white lips going on, almost like he was, you call that when you're hyperventilating. That's what I'm talking about. Almost like he was hyperventilating. But ultimately, I don't think it really took away from his performance at all. Maybe a little bit. He still looked like Samoa Joe out there, maybe just a little notch below what I think we're used to. But I think that's okay. I think it worked. As I've said on the show before, I was lucky enough to be in the building when he won his first NXT championship against Finn Balor at a house show. There wasn't a whole hell of a lot of people in the building, but I was there and it was awesome. This definitely did not have that same, obviously I wasn't in the building, so of course it's not going to have the same reaction as it did, through my computer monitor, but it still didn't invoke anything nearly like that for me because I think it was just so expected. At a house show, you don't expect a championship change. As a matter of fact, we all sat there for a while. I mean, we were all cheering, but we were all sitting there for a while, like I was talking with people around me, like waiting for, the decision to have the belt go back to Finn Balor, telling us something happened and there was a disqualification or whatever. So that was super, super like a surprise.
That happened in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, also with Bret Hart when he won the championship. Like there was a moment before everybody kind of exploded because they were like, what? This isn't a thing. This is not even a thing.
It was weird. We all exploded as it happened, and then like everything calmed down. And as Samoa Joe got up on the turnbuckle and like raised the belt overhead, everybody exploded again because it was like, okay, nobody's coming out. We don't see like I forget who's there like acting as like the official that night. There was somebody there, and I don't remember who it was, but we didn't see whoever that was come out or anything like that. It was such a surprise, and then the building completely just popped again. This, to my point though, this wasn't nearly as much surprise. I've been thinking since we saw him Karrion Kross debut on the main roster, that it was an inevitability that he was going to lose the belt to Samoa Joe. Just kind of the way that it everything was falling, all of the cards are kind of falling there. I was really happy to see this first time we actually have a three-time NXT champion. I did not ever think we would see Samoa Joe back in NXT. I did not think I was going to get to like cover another one of his matches or anything like that. And obviously here we are, which is really cool. I'm a big Samoa Joe guy, so that's great. Seeing him win with the Muscle Buster, I thought was a great touch right at the end there. We only saw him. I mean, how many times do we see him bust that out after the Tyson Kidd injury? Maybe once. It wasn't many, if that. I don't even remember. He might have just retired it altogether until now. I don't recall, but it was an awesome way to end the match. I'm looking forward to see what happens here. I feel like Samoa Joe's probably going to be more of a transitional champion, considering, he was future endeavored he was god of the company, and Triple H was like, "Well, no, we're gonna use you." And then they obviously shifted gears somewhere. Somebody else was probably slotted for this match. Obviously, they shifted gears and brought Joe in. So it's kind of crazy to think about. Like, there's a guy who's just like, they were gonna let go out of the company, and now, you know, he kind of came back to do this. It was cool. But I feel like he's probably going to be more of a transitional champion. I don't know for who. I don't know really who they're going to build up to that point quite yet. But I'm looking forward to whatever he's doing, and hopefully, you know, getting some more reps in the ring. He'll work off some of that ring rust.
I can't speak to how frequently he's continued to use the Muscle Buster, but I definitely know that I've noticed he's consciously made a point of making sure the bump is taken more on the back than the upper,
yeah,
you know, shoulders and neck.
Definitely. I feel like he was definitely using it during his brief cup of coffee with the main event when they moved him up and had him feud with Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly.
I want to say he was, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a good visual to put up against Brock when you've got to, like, build guys up for an unbeatable champion. As for who could be the next champion, it's never been so hard to predict. Usually we feel like we have a great read on things. Like with Raquel, we knew it would be Dakota Kai, right? But I think it could be maybe LA Knight. If they really want to just fast track him up there, it could be Kyle O'Reilly after tonight, but it would be interesting to see how he even get to that match. It could be Pete Dunne, because they've set up that feud, and Dunne is somebody who can run at the top. They just have to reestablish him as a main event player, but I would assume that he will be back in that space with the gigantic caveat that we have no idea what to expect in terms of changes in the very, very short term. All right.
Yeah, and that is in the background for everything, of course, but with the logic that we are more familiar with, it does absolutely come down to what Nate brought up in just how transitional Joe is or isn't going to be. Right now, you would think it's too soon to go to KOR, even though he's the obvious next. And Dunne is tied up with Ciampa, and Cole probably won't be showing up on NXT anymore. And Gargano, the other guy that Joe has teased feuds with, sort of has this index thing going on. Well, more than sort of, but it feels like it's maybe the easiest to navigate around if they want a new challenger at tomorrow's tapings. So I like your LA Knight thing, even though I kind of feel like he's not long for the brand either, because he's so perfectly molded for what Vince looks for. I mean, apart from the fact that he's 38, but I mean, let's squeeze the juice while it's there. I guess the other option is just that fill in the blank of, and now for something completely different.
Yeah. You go to Brendan Vink.
There you go. See, okay. And that crossed my mind, and I, you know, that's a guy he did not need to win that breakout tournament.
Right.
You know, losing in the semis is not going to change where that guy ends up.
And I'm not saying his real name to be cool, folks. I'm saying his real name because I literally can't remember what he's using now.
You know, Elliot Sexton or Tony Modra or one of those.
Duke Hudson. There, thank you. Let's go ahead and hit the phone lines. We are going to hit all these matches in roundabout ways are as such. So we'll get to you, and let's go two thoughts tonight. We got a few of you, but not so many that we can't do two thoughts. 615, I'm going to start with you. So if you're in the 615 and you're holding, go ahead. You are on.
Kelly, Nate, Tom, it's good to have all three of you back. I missed y'all. It's Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And, man, Kelly, how are you? It's been a while since I talked to you. How are you doing?
Doing better. I lost a friend at a relatively young age last week. Mm-hmm. So it's been a trying week. I mean, I'm not young anymore, but I still think of myself as young. He was mid-40s, and should not have happened, but he lived fast, and none of us are surprised, but it's still a big bummer. It is good to be back, and I miss Peter, but I'm glad to be here talking with the idiots about wrestling.
Yeah, no, I was definitely sorry to hear that, Kelly. Thoughts and prayers with you, man, with him. And Nate, Tom, it's always good to talk to you guys. The show was really good. 2.5 hours was a great time. I guess I was surprised that Adam and Kyle was, you know, really good, and it's what I expected. I expected Kyle to go over. But it was quicker than I thought. I mean, it was good for what it was, but I thought they would do a little more, especially the – what did you guys think about the third fall in the cage? Because I thought that was so quick, and I wasn't anticipating that. Was it almost too fast the way they did it? What did you guys think about the actual finish of that match?
Okay, so Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, first fall happens at 3:27, won by Kyle O'Reilly in some of the best 3.5 minutes of pure wrestling you will ever see. Would have loved to see more of that, but I also understand not wanting to go in on a long, brutal, regular wrestling match right after the best brutal wrestling match of the year. But yes, 3:27, the pinfall there. 16:57, the pinfall by Cole in the street fight. And then the final victory at 25 minutes and 23 seconds. However, that's kind of unfair because getting like the extracurriculars they did and then getting the cage into place, and that took 4 or 5 minutes. And really, once they got into the cage, there was only about 4 or 5 minutes of work before this ended. This did seem quick. They got to that Panama Sunrise way faster than I would have thought, like fast to the degree that I didn't even buy it as a possible finish. It didn't even cross my mind. Like, it's his finisher, one of his couple of finishers, and it still just did not occur to me that he would win here. And then Kyle wins with a very, very lightning quick tap out. It was fast enough that I wondered if that ludicrous, unnecessary, but I mean, these guys are going to do what they're going to do, spot with the Beal from the top onto the two chairs back to back. I mean, that was a out loud wince for me, that spot. So I really, really liked this match. On a lot of nights, this would be match of the night. I was mad when the first fall ended so early because I wanted to see some more pure wrestling. But these guys got pretty creative, and there were some good spots, and it was fun. Nate?
So I can't disagree with pretty much anything you said. The first fall, that first 3 minutes was fantastic. Amazing, amazing technical wrestling there. The finish completely took me by surprise, as it did, I think, the majority of the audience as well. I mean, that you could hear a pin drop in the building for the most part when that pinfall took place. Now, and it's weird because it happened so quickly that it was like kind of I'm circled back to what I was just talking about. Was that really supposed to happen? Was you kind of waiting for somebody to call an audible or call, you know, say that wasn't it, but then, you know, you hear the bell ring and okay, he got the pinfall. He actually did it. I feel like Kyle O'Reilly really needed to win that first fall after the trash talk that he had when they were actually setting this 2 out of 3 falls up, you know, saying that he's going to out-wrestle Cole and he can't, Cole can't beat him in just a pure wrestling match. I forget how he worded it, but that was essentially the gist that he got by or got across. So I felt like that was his to win. And obviously he did. I think he looked great. The second fall obviously Kyle gets injured at the ribs, and they played off that rib injury for the rest of the match. So he got, you know, quote injured. I thought this was a great setup, a great way to actually integrate a lot of the weapons and things into the match. They had me for it. I was kind of hook, line, and sinker right in the match. They didn't really necessarily lose me or anything. That chair, oh my God, when he threw Cole throws Kyle O'Reilly off of the top rope onto those two chairs that were kind of back to back, and he basically like spiked them on those two chairs. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. That like That made me wince so hard. I'm sure he's taken that spot before. I've seen spots like that before, but like just something about that, the way he took it and everything, like Kyle, I think is a lot better than most people give him credit for. The cage match, I will completely agree with you guys. It seemed really, really short. And what was obviously it was a little strange too, is right before they got the cage, put together and everything, Kyle O'Reilly's really selling this injury. He gets powerbombed through the table, or not through the table, but on the table, outside the ring and attacked by Kyle, by Adam and everything. And he's just down and out. And then like 2 minutes later, he's running the ropes and he's got all of his momentum back and he's still selling a little bit, but it was just a very stark difference to like, dude, you can barely, in the second fall, there was a point where he tried to throw a punch and he kind of collapsed. Now he's running the ropes and stuff. It just, the selling was a little inconsistent there for me, but it is what it is. It worked. It was fine. But as far as the finish of that goes, I honestly thought it was a brilliant finish. I was not expecting Kyle O'Reilly to lock in that leg lock, and I wasn't expecting Cole to tap right there. I thought that this was, and I even wrote it in the hits and misses. I write the hits and misses typically as I'm watching the show. And I said something about the wit of Adam Cole using handcuffs to make sure Kyle O'Reilly couldn't escape. And I just kind of figured that he was going to beat on Cole a little bit, or beat on O'Reilly a little bit, and then escape the ring. I was not expecting the super kick to be caught. I was not expecting that leg lock, and I was not expecting him to tap out there. I think the finish, I personally like that finish. I don't think everybody's gonna. I personally liked it because it kind of did come out of nowhere in a way that worked for me, unlike the first one, which came out of nowhere. And it seemed like it wasn't, I don't know. It just didn't work. It wasn't, I can't quite put my finger on why, but it seemed like it just kind of came out of nowhere in a way where the match just wasn't flowing in that direction. Whereas this, there was a lot of intensity. There's a lot of hype. The crowd was just going nuts. And we got that finish. I think the outcome was the correct one too. Adam Cole clearly is, well, most likely going to be main roster bound or potentially out of WWE altogether, depending on, what goes on with his contract status and all of that. But regardless, he's probably not going to be around on NXT much longer. So why not do the favor to the guy that's going to be there for the longer term? I think both myself as well as the majority of the fans would have rather have seen Adam Cole get the win here simply because we like Adam Cole better. But I think from a booking perspective and, a storyline perspective and Kyle's own journey, because Adam Cole doesn't need this win. Adam Cole is a star. Kyle does. Kyle needs something that he can latch onto like this. I think it was the right choice, the right move. And I'm looking forward to see what Kyle does in the future. I mean, he hasn't got me as a main event guy yet. I feel like he's got some work to do, but I'm in his corner. I'm in his corner.
Kyle needs to, first and foremost, get away from Adam Cole, and that will allow him to flourish as a single, because then people won't be booing him by proxy, because they're not booing Kyle because of Kyle anymore. Now that they were kind of pushing away from cool Kyle, they're booing him because of Cole, and Cole is awesome, but man, his loudest fan base is the worst. They are tiresome and they are hard to listen to. I thought that it might be an interesting night. What chance early on in the show? So I was a little worried, but what are you going to do? I also want to call out a moment. Cole, just a consummate pro. He had so much trouble setting up that chair in between the top and second buckles. Something that we've seen in a lot of street fights and matches like that, and it was not cooperating. So, and they were going away from it they didn't want to show it anymore because it was getting long to the point of embarrassing. And of course, he gets it done. The crowd gives him the Bronx cheer, and he just does like this bow with a flourish just to mock the moment. Good save by Adam Cole, who is great at whatever he does. So hopefully I'll be interested to see what the next act is for both of these guys, because between their last couple matches, it seemed like the show didn't know what to do with them. They just didn't even really have them exist outside of their feud with each other almost at all. Tom?
So the chair spot, the suplex onto the tops of the chair spot, we've definitely seen that before, and we've seen it in Adam Cole matches. It's just crazy that that's a thing that he keeps going to. Although, if I remember correctly, and I definitely remember correctly in the case of the Aleister Black takeover match at the very least, maybe not in the case of the others specifically, but it's been Cole taking the spot, not his opponent. You know, the person who sets it up is the one who takes it, is usually the way that falls. But I do think that this was the best match of this feud. I do agree with the fact that there were elements of it, particularly the finishes, that were too abrupt or too late. And I think that was threefold. First of all, this is where the order of the match card comes into play. I went into tonight wondering if they shouldn't just go ahead and open the show with this. And
absolutely, same.
Yeah, and after seeing Walter and Dragunov, which you can imagine the level to which that might go, especially since there is a precedent set for it. It does a disservice to these guys to put that on right before it without, you know, say Grimes and Knight between, even if Grimes and Knight wouldn't have felt as important. I mean, it didn't really feel super important in and of itself, but it would have felt even less so being a cool down match. But with things the way they were, the first fall came very quickly, and that would have been the opportunity to draw things out and do the Eddie Guerrero thing of saying, like, no, just lay there and sell longer. No. We need to get the crowd back into this. We need to let them cool down and catch their breath, because there wasn't a cool down before us. So that would have been the moment to do that, and the fall came very quickly. They did do a lot more with the second fall in terms of Kyle showing that relative readiness that he's refound to get vicious. But again, it's too late, because we're already this deep. We're at the blow off of the feud, and it just felt like, okay, he's finally doing this, and it's not to any great height or anything. He just, you know, wraps a chain around his fist, grimaces, and then doesn't even really get to use the chain all that much. So I felt like that was also too late. And then, again, going back to the Walter and Dragunov match being before this, and also the fact that Gonzalez and Kai went on before this, both of those matches worked an angle where the babyface was overcoming an injury that had been exacted upon them in the match. With Dragunov, it was less specific an injury. It was more just like Walter was beating the life out of him. But with Gonzalez, it was her shoulder, and with O'Reilly, it was his back. And that particularly came to a head in the third fall. And it's just like, well, when you look at the card holistically, this is less effective because I've already seen it multiple times tonight. And if you put on Dragunov and Walter afterward, you could still do the same thing with Gonzalez and Kai. You can still do the same thing with Cole and O'Reilly. And because Walter and Dragunov are doing something so different, you can get away with doing that a third time. But this coming third was too samey. So, I guess if you wanted to look into it even more, the specificity of the handcuff spot, once somebody gets cuffed, you start wondering what is going to come next. What is the heel's plan? What is the babyface's escape route? Are they going to unscrew the turnbuckle? What is the big plan for this? So your mind does start working. I guess it wasn't – yes, the finish was – very abrupt, but I guess it wasn't particularly shocking to me, because Adam Cole did that same thing that we've seen. I always, you know, remember Charlotte Flair doing it, but it's not exclusive to them, where they telegraph that the finish is coming because, and this is worked a lot of the time, so I'm not criticizing it. It's just, it is a telegraph where it's the moment where they start monologuing and they say, it's all about me, you can never beat me. And of course, the next thing that's going to happen is that they're going to get beat. So he started talking about how the Undisputed Era was all about him, and I was just like, oh, okay, finish is coming.
Yeah, yeah, and the announcing didn't help either with, this is just a layup for Adam Cole. I'm like, just stop. Oh, by the way, my wife watched with me tonight, and at the very beginning, the announcers come out, and she said, Vic looks so much like Buddy Holly that I don't think it can be a mistake. Like, she literally was just like, I think he's cosplaying. I think he's cosplaying Buddy Holly tonight.
Fantastic.
Oh, Vic. His nerdiness found another level. He's grown a lot on me. He makes his mistakes, but he's grown a lot on me. Let me go back to Sean. I got to unmute you again. And if you got a second one, go ahead.
Yeah. Wanted to say real fast, I agree with Nate more on the Samoa Joe match. Like, I thought it was actually really good for what it was. And I think once, if it's either Pete Dunne or Gargano or whoever they go with next for him with the title, I think his matches will still, they don't need to go crazy long, but he'll get better. He'll get more used to being in the ring again, you know, regular matches. So I'm not, you know, too worried about it. But going back to, you guys kind of brought it up a minute ago with Walter and Dragunov. Oh, my golly gee whiz. That was one of the best matches I've seen in a while. It was, I mean, again, I've said it the last couple of weeks with Dragunov, just not being able to see him a whole lot, you know, in the States. And just these few weeks on NXT television, like, oh, my goodness, he's phenomenal in the ring. Walter, I'd already heard, you know, enough about how great he was, but just seeing the match against Ciampa and now seeing this match, oh, I mean, I can't use enough superlatives to say how hard-hitting and how just phenomenal that match was. I mean, it was definitely, I would say, 4.5. I mean, it's hard to say it's 5-star just because, you know, I don't know, it's hard to, you know, stars are always hard to give to matches like that, but just the emotion of it. Dragunov, I love just his heart and his competitive spirit. Walter just so, you know, for his size, can do so many good things, moves around really well, just hits so hard. And to see the chest of Ilya after that and see how much that took on the toll on both guys, I just want to know what you guys thought about it. I thought it was phenomenal. And, guys, I appreciate, you know, you. Kelly, I'm glad you're back. I'm again, thoughts and prayers with your friend and everything going on with that. And Nate and Tom, you guys are the best too. It's good to talk to you, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Sean. Yeah, this oh, my God. So this Dragunov-Walter is my favorite match that I've seen probably since Dragunov-Walter. And star ratings are hard to give, but I am extremely comfortable giving this 5 stars. Extremely comfortable for many reasons. This was like all the pieces are in place technically, and they did all the, they hit all the right story beats in the ring. But on top of that, you've also got this really awesome long form story. And I know a lot of NXT US fans don't know the story of Dragunov fighting from underneath and really getting to this spot. But then you also have the built-in story that Walter's been champion for 870 days, and that doesn't need any further explanation. That is just something that does not happen in today's wrestling landscape. So you got that built in as well, and so you've got massive emotion. I knew that Dragunov was going to win this match. I've just been paying a lot of attention, and he is – I felt very, very strongly that this was the time. And I thought that this was going to be it. When it happened, I got pretty choked up, and I couldn't type for a minute as I'm doing the recap. And Ilya got a little choked up, too. He held it together, but as they were finishing that segment of showing him, I got emotional there, too. He also did some great, great babyface stuff, some firing up at really critical times in the match. Like, these guys both just get it from a like, they're awesome wrestlers, but their psychology is just completely off the hook as well. They're just so good at knowing when these moments need to happen, when these beats need to happen. Like, it, a match like this is so good that I think, how did they not just lay out the whole thing in the beforehand? Because it just, every note was correct. 22 minutes and 3 seconds. If this was on an NXT UK show, this would have gone 40, because they do that with their matches quite often. But this was relatively compact. But even at the 7-minute match, I'm just like, how are these guys going to go longer? And then on top of it, you just gotta thank Ilya. Ilya's got to thank Mother Nature for giving him that body that just puts over his opponent so much, because he just reddens so easily. And by the end of this, he's got one segment where he basically looks like he's got a phoenix painted on his chest. Yeah, this is what I was most excited for. Well, I was most excited for Dakota Kai to win the women's championship, but this was what I was second most excited for. And I just don't know what else to say, Tom.
Yeah, that little interview afterward, it looked like he was experiencing a super villain origin story. Like he had fallen in the acid, and now he was coming out with all of these deformities, and he was going to go fight Batman. So we knew this was going to be match of the night because of the incredible chemistry these guys have and their proven ability to just work impressively seamless sequences and you know, the obvious willingness to be incredibly physical with one another. And we knew, we've said multiple times on this podcast, that, yeah, Dragunov is going to win this. But knowing those things, feeling very strongly about those things anyway, realistically, did not take away from this at all, because absolutely, these guys get the psychology of it. And most of what you'll hear in response to this match is about the physicality. And obviously that lends to it, but it really is the psychology and just the effectiveness to which these two have respectively built their characters, because you absolutely have the heightened reality of WWE professional wrestling here, where you've got just like massive power moves, and the babyface still gets up and is kicking out of a lot of big stuff. And Dragunov even has a Hulk up moment in here, just like, you know, he kind of looks like a rabid Macaulay Culkin to me, but even looking like that, it's like you can't not think of Hulk Hogan's Hulk up when he's doing his hulking up here after taking, after eating chop after chop and clothesline after clothesline from Walter. And yet, for as heightened as all of that is, it's still so believable. Like, I believed Ilya kicking out of Walter's signature power bomb and Walter's signature splash off the top more than I believed Kyle kicking out of the definitely not the finish of the match Panama Sunrise at the end of that cage match, just because of how much I buy his never say die character. Like, you have to choke the life out of him as Walter did last time to be able to topple him. And Walter, of course, is the guy when he puts on a sleeper hold, as the audience member, you feel like you're the one who can't breathe. So, you know, again, that's where the physicality helps, the believability of all of it. But, you know, you just really felt throughout this whole match that Walter was trying to squash a bug and couldn't get it done no matter what he tried. And after such a long reign, which indeed is a built-in story, so I feel like this was pretty effective even for people who haven't been following it closely. And I am well aware of what's been going on. I haven't been watching NXT UK, but, you know, so I guess that's the I'm kind of coming from that middle perspective, but obviously still effective for me. But after such a long reign, what better way than to have Walter tap out? I mean, it's such, I said that Joe and Cross was definitive, but that was more because it didn't take finisher after finisher after finisher for Joe to win. This was definitive because Ilya outlasted and just wrenched in that hold for and would not let go until finally he wrenched back one final time, and Walter just started tapping immediately, which, again, after this dominant reign, was just such an excellent visual. And, you know, for
and
the...
And a
for
shocking
the,
visual, because
yeah.
they could have just had him pass out. And I thought
absolutely.
100% that's what it was going to be. And I love what you're saying, because, like, this is so much bigger for Ilya.
Absolutely. And he sold the win so beautifully. Of course, this is a guy who, you know, it's a blend of kayfabe and reality, because in kayfabe and reality, he's been working at this for so long. And of course, it's not just kayfabe that Walter has held the belt for as long as he had and been has and been as dominant as he has. That bleeds into reality as well. So it probably wasn't too hard for him to do it, but he did absolutely do it. He sold it so beautifully that when he was being – when Jessica Carr, who just last night reffed Edge and Seth Rollins, another excellent match, she's here and doing this now. What a weekend for her. She's handing him the belt, and he can't believe it. She has to point to the insignia on her shirt, like, yes, this is official. I am handing you this belt right now. And back to the Macaulay Culkin thing, he looks like he's just woken up after making the wish the prior night, and all of his jerk-ass siblings have disappeared, and now he's celebrating throughout his house. I think if there's only one tiny thing that I could poke in this, it's that I already had, again, didn't take away from the match, but I already had that Ilya was going to win in the back of my mind, and I thought I detected some boo-boo face on Walter during the ceremonial, like, blah, 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 here's the champion and the challenger at the beginning of the match. Thought I saw some of that, but that is the only tiny little thing that I can try to poke, even if I, you know, I have to try if I want to, if that makes sense.
Jessica Carr, one of the greatest referees in the game today, didn't get the main event tonight, but Jessica Carr did kind of get the main event tonight. Nate.
Wow. This match was absolutely freaking incredible. From everything you guys already talked about, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to necessarily add, because I think you guys touched on everything. I thought this was going to be match of the night. This was easily match of the night for me. One thing, the first thing that I wrote in the hits and misses, this is not a wrestling match. This is a masterpiece, and I feel like it really was. They took me on a ride the whole way. They did absolutely a phenomenal storytelling throughout the match. Even if you don't know, like, you know, Tom and I, we haven't really been paying attention to NXT UK. Kelly, I'm not really sure if you have either, but haven't really been paying attention to NXT UK.
But a lot of it is reading now.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say. It's like a lot of it's just reading you know, what I hear from, you know, through the grapevine or whatever. But, you know, actually, like, I went out of my way to watch Ilya Dragunov versus Walter the first time around. And I am so glad that I did. Even if you don't know that whole story or anything like that, they still did a good job over the past couple weeks kind of telling a bit of a, you know, telling a little bit of a recap of that story and kind of giving us a reason to get behind Ilya Dragunov. He was portrayed as such an underdog here. I mean, just his size, his, you know, the size difference between the two. He was really portrayed as an underdog, and man, like, I forget which one of you guys said it, but somebody said never, you know, never give up, never can do, or never die attitude. And man, that absolutely was the case here. Every false finish. You didn't know. Like, it had me on the edge of my seat. You had no idea if this was going to be the end of the match for Walter or for Dragunov, who was actually going to come out on top. You know, you could make the case, you know, and Kelly said this at the top of the segment, but, you know, you could make the case for either one of the guys to retain. You had that built-in story of the 870-day reign. You've got Ilya Dragunov, that, you know, scrappy up-and-comer that, you know, with that never-die attitude, and that everybody's behind. Like, you could make the case for either one. I thought this was a great finish. The tap-out was amazing. Awesome visual. Everything about that finish was just fantastic. I did not, well, I don't know. In my head, I'm now laughing at the rabid Macaulay Culkin reference, so I lost my train of thought. So I was going to say something about Home Alone, but that's okay. Regardless, long story short, I'm gonna shut up. Awesome match. Fantastic. Loved it. We'll move on.
I got an email from Jordan Blair Bremner. Hi, gang, and my favorite idiot, Corbin. Takeover was all right, but I didn't think it was anything special, and as usual with NXT, a bit predictable. Do you have any thoughts on what the changes to NXT will be? I'm wondering if there will be a lot of NXT UK wrestlers moving to NXT, with some of the newer wrestlers going to the UK as an NXT development territory. For example, I could now see Walter being in NXT full-time and taking the title off Joe, with some of the other bigger name NXT talent moving to Raw and SmackDown, such as Cole, O'Reilly, Gargano, Ciampa, Kai, and so on. I'm interested to see what happens, but also a bit skeptical that the changes will be positive. We're in our sixth lockdown here, over 200 days all up, so it's great to have so much wrestling to watch when you're stuck at home with a curfew. Good to have you back, Kelly. Don't shut up. Jordan from Melbourne, Australia. Thank you so much, Jordan.
Shut up, Kelly.
I will not. I absolutely will not. Kai better be going to the main roster, or this was unforgivable, but we'll get to that. Walter is an extremely interesting idea for next champion, because this match being on an NXT takeover, if I have to nitpick, the Ilya Walter match, it's the fact that this didn't happen in front of the NXT UK faithful. That's the only issue I have with it. But it would be a net positive by far if this was just another match to get over Walter before he starts going for the NXT US Championship. That would be extremely interesting to me. I did think this takeover was quite better than all right, and I would say that particularly because they did a great job of building these feuds. Who knows what that's going to look like in the future, but this was the best takeover at building feuds in a long time. And of course, there was a bigger emotional response at the end of the matches as a result. That is why I dug this one more than a lot of them in recent memory, and expected to, because they had put so much emotional weight into all of the matches and something into all the matches. A lot of the wrestlers you mentioned could be moving on to the main roster, but I mean, Gargano and Ciampa have said that that's not their goal. Let me throw to you, Tom.
Let's see what I can find here. I forgot to mention Walter's name earlier as far as who could challenge Joe, just because, and he's a name that has occurred to me several times over the past, probably year, as somebody who it's just like, oh, okay, when he loses, he should come over here and challenge for the U.S. belt. But so much of the conversation around him is just, can they convince him to be less stubborn about where he lives and what he wants to do, because he wants to be a Brock Lesnar before reaching that echelon. And it's just a matter of what they can sign him to, I guess. So I forget about him in that regard, but yeah, as we speak, tomorrow is the first of two back-to-back tapings for presumably the next 4 weeks of shows. We won't know that until the reports come out, but, you know, it seems like the timing would, how long it takes to tape an episode and that sort of thing would line up there. And my prevailing theory is that they are taping so then they can take the time afterward without having to do shows in the Performance Center to revamp things and do the new look, which could be, along with the tapings, in part a cost-cutting measure in case it was bothering anybody except for me that I couldn't remember what my second point was about the tapings announcement on PWT Talk NXT earlier, last week now. that was it, that I was suspecting that it could be a cost-cutting measure. But I also but on top of being a cost-cutting measure, the revamp is also that visual signal that this is a new era, and it might be like cueing people to be like, hey, check it out, because there's something new going on here. You know, if you've tuned out or whatever. And of course, this is just one of those things where there's so much that I have to rack my brain here. I think there are so many different places I could go, but I think I'll just say that anybody who's been listening knows that I'm personally optimistic about this. So the way I'm looking at it, while so much of what I'm seeing is doom crying and just saying like, oh my God, it's being gutted, and oh, this takeover is the end of NXT, and it's going to be something completely new afterwards, and it's just going to be like a whole parade of Braun Strowmans, and it'll be awful. I mean, not only did you already get signals tonight of continuing stories, so you know it's not just changing overnight, I really don't think this rug is getting pulled out entirely. Like, there will be significant fundamental changes, but it's going to, like, it makes sense within the company, as I've detailed at length in my opinion in recent episodes of our Daily Cast. Sorry, being distracted here. Have you thought of anything else, Kelly? I'll jump back in once my brain gets back on track here.
For me, I was going to joke that so far the only thing to be extremely angry about is letting go of Russ Taylor, Tyler Rust. So, that would be the biggest thing for me. Do you want me to throw to Nate?
I'll try to finish up here. I knew when the email came in, I was like, oh boy, it's the subject that I want to talk about, but it's also one that has so many layers to it, and we just haven't seen what's going to come of it yet. So it's like my brain just goes up into outer space, even though I have so many thoughts on the matter, of course. I will point out briefly that the beginning of the show tonight I thought was really well done, and also I kind of felt like the chaos versus the laws of physics was like NXT is the chaos and Vince is the law. So I kind of liked that. And I just feel like, again, like I'll try not to read, well, I usually have no problem doing this, also taking into account that there haven't been many tapings of late since I stopped covering them. But when tapings reports do come out from tomorrow and Tuesday, the only thing that I'm wondering about is whether it's intended for TV or not, will Triple H come out at the beginning and say, we are NXT? Because if he does, that's when it's like, oh, well, maybe this will be more of a significant change than I'm thinking. But I think the main things I'll point to is just that Vince McMahon is, you know, for all the flaws, and there are plenty, he is the most successful professional wrestling promoter in history for a great many reasons. One of those reasons is that he knows that if you only have giants, you have no giants. So this is not going to become a parade of Braun Strowmans. And NXT still, as far as I know, has a contract with USA to continue producing this show, and they need to be telling stories. So that's another reason why I'm not optimistic, and I haven't learned this person's name yet, but they've actually, apparently, according to Wade Keller, hired someone to be the liaison between, you know, Vince, who's not going to spend a lot of time here in Orlando, and NXT. And that's been the, like, if I could point to one single thing as the issue in this whole developmental experiment here, it's that they haven't had that communication. And so apparently there is an individual who is designated, you know, that's in their purview. Of course, we'll be looking for a lot of change here, but I'm not shaken in my boots that it's going to be like this completely new thing tomorrow, and anybody who still loves what NXT is doing is just going to be kicked out the door.
Yeah, and I, for the same reasons that you noted, there are ongoing storylines, agree that it's the sky is not falling yet. So, Vince is the most successful for a lot of reasons, none of which include him being 75 now. So I think things could go south in a hurry if if, I don't know, if somebody doesn't get in his ear. But I am very interested to see what happens. Nate, I'm going to throw to you, if Corbin doesn't totally freak out, he's not freaking out about the thunderstorms in my area, is he?
Well, he might be freaking out about Hurricane Henry that supposedly hit here today. I'm still waiting for it to hit, but I guess it came through. I don't know. I guess Corbin heard his name being called through the email here because as soon as the email started, he, like, just really wanted to play. Okay, so there's a lot here. As far as, you know, wrestlers coming up to, you know, and kind of coming from UK over to NXT, I mean, I feel like that's, it's probably going to be the case. I guess rather than rehashing everything you guys just said, like, you know, I talked a little bit about this on Tuesday. I feel like this is probably going to be a good thing for NXT as a whole. I mean, first you got to define what a success is for NXT, right? I ended up reading a transcript of an interview that Nick Khan had today with somebody. I don't know. I read a little bit. Actually, Haydorn's got a bit of it up on the Torch here. But I mean, essentially, you know, it's what we've been talking about. It's they haven't had a system where they've been able to successfully make main roster stars. Vince just doesn't know what to do with them. And yes, sure. For the most part, we like NXT and what it's been. I mean, even the past year or so where we haven't really liked NXT, it's still been the show we've rather watched than Raw and SmackDown, right? So I feel like it's if it's going to be a success, it needs to be able to create bigger stars for the main roster. Unfortunately, I feel like that might mean NXT may kind of become a little bit more main rostery of a show. I'm hoping in a way it's a good thing, but in a way, like, I am a little bit nervous that it's going to deviate from what we like about NXT, what it was, you know, the wrestling show, the show wasn't necessarily sports entertainment. I'm kind of afraid that might start seeping into NXT. This liaison, actually, that when Tom brought it up, that's first I heard of it. I haven't really been online a whole heck of a lot today, so if it came out today, whatever. I think it's a fantastic idea because there has been so much. There hasn't been any communication between Vince and NXT, at least very little, from what it seems. So there's no continuity with these characters, and they drop the ball all the time and things like that. Overall, I think it should be a good thing for the company. Whether or not it's a good thing for the fans, I think is going to be another story. Because I think it's going to end up preparing these guys for the main roster. From what I understand, it's a completely different world. You know, NXT, you're able to be a little bit more you and have a little bit more leeway with what you do. You get up to main roster, and it's Vince's way or the highway. So I feel like if they're kind of a little bit more stringent with what they do down in NXT and you kind of have those restrictions on these guys, it will prepare them for what they're going to inevitably be doing up on the main roster. Does it hinder, you know, creativity and stifle creativity and kind of kill off the show that we love? It's kind of where I'm at.
All right. We are going to go to the phone lines again. This is our good friend Darrell. Darrell, I was going to give you some warning, but I forgot to do so. So, Darrell, if you are listening right now, say hey.
How you guys doing today? Live from Vegas over here. So, hope you guys doing good on a late night on the East Coast.
Vegas, take care of yourself, my man.
Hi, Rola.
Oh, no. I came out here to come to SummerSlam. So, hey,
all right.
That's about it. But happy you guys, everybody back. Happy to see you back, Kelly. And glad to talk to you, Tom, and you, Nick, and Nate. So let's get this thing started. Y'all talked about one thing that I want to do. I just want to reiterate that Walter and Ilya match, probably 5 stars, and was better than the match they put on when they had no one in there and not too many people was watching it. But I watched it the day of it coming out, so That was amazing. The intrigue that they put in there and the thought process and everything and the story they tell and how you have to go above and beyond the limit just to take the title off that beast of a man, Walter, and how their engine went more than even the other matches that you've seen on NXT tonight. None of those tanks went as far as those two. So I'm glad they seen that, and I think it's a story to be told with that. So if you do bring Walter in and he is the next champion, the person to take the title off of Joe, that lets everybody know. I think this match sets a standard and can be used in storylines in the future of how you will have to go to be able to remove a title off that man. So I enjoyed that. But my first question for you guys tonight would be about the women's match. I thought that was the second best match on the card. I know some might say Kyle O'Reilly and Cole, but that's not mine. I think that women's title match was the second best match on the card. It had some clunky spots, but, hey, Dakota Kai showed me a lot. She showed me a lot of things that she was trying and that she did that was different. That was different in the match. I like the story they was telling in the ring. I like how she came out there and got Raquel off her game by taunting her and making her do different things. You could tell that Raquel was a little different, and she had to refocus later on in the match just to get over it. And I like the finish of the match and everything. And I like how it told them a story of two women who know each other so well and who were friends. And he had to go to the limit. And I also like the ending of the match. Finally, the best heel in the game, Kaylee Ray, is here. And hopefully they wait a while and they tell a story when she goes and take down Raquel Gonzalez. How did you guys like the whole thing all together? And what do you guys think about what I just said?
So, Rick. Okay, so this story was so beautifully built for Dakota Kai to finally get over the hump and win this championship. Like, it was built literally with that in mind. I have no complaints about Kaylee Ray, one of the best heels in the game, definitely the best hair in the game also. She's a wonderful wrestler, great hair care regimen. My wife brings her up all the time as insane in caring for a large amount of hair. Yeah, this was 12 minutes and 26 seconds. Raquel beats Dakota Kai. The match was very good. It was a well laid out big versus little. These are easier when the little is face. But when the little is heel, it's a bit harder. And these two did, I think, a great job. Raquel, I continue to think she's kind of okay, but I'm always the last one to be on board with a monster. So I understand that might be getting in my way. I also just really – I haven't sworn at – a wrestling result in a lot of years, probably since Hogan was winning everything. But I did that tonight. I really, really thought that this was the time for Dakota Kai, but this is where I don't know what the future holds for NXT, and the main roster gets in the way. I do think Raquel is in need of more seasoning. She strikes me as kind of ready, but I would love to see her do more in NXT before she's called up, because I think that I said this last week or the week before with Greg. I think if she goes up too early, she's just Tamina, and that's fine. You can be Tamina, but I don't think that is the height of what they have in mind for Raquel. As far as Kaylee Ray, she's absolutely wonderful. I can't wait to see a little more of her, Tom.
So, Kelly, I'm going to start by asking you a question, because I'm not sure in the storied history of Kelly adoring Dakota Kai if I've ever asked why that is. And I say that as someone who is on your side. I didn't buy into her when I saw her for a first time in the first Mae Young Classic. Didn't know her before that, but I learned to appreciate her quite a bit. I always look forward to her matches now. She's always excellent. But never someone that I've considered, I mean, obviously, you know, a favorite wrestler is something different to everyone. I'm just curious how you would define why you invest in her so much and why a loss like this crushes you so much. I'm not questioning it. I'm just wondering what your explanation would be.
This is an awesome question, and I'm surprised I haven't been asked before now. She is somebody I bought into early. I liked her music. I liked her style. I certainly love the way she works, and I love her voice. There's a lot going on there, but it's not. We used to do this podcast with a guy named Justin James, and I love Justin. He was obsessed with the idea that it had to be something like Attraction, and it wasn't. It's not that. Like, it's not purely that. I'm attracted to talent, so that certainly has happened, but that's not. Justin was obsessed with the idea that that's what it was about, and it's not at all, because if you want me to go through what I think is really attractive, that's a rabbit hole. Anyway, I am emotionally invested in her because she's been, from the beginning, I thought she was interesting. I like her style. I love kicks, and that's why I love her. That's why I love Katsuyori Shibata. Basically, anyone who's got kicks as their main mode of attack is a big deal to me. So that's part of it. I don't know. The video game music, a lot of things came together for me, for her as a face. She also has had the benefit of being in some of the very, very best storylines, like long-form storylines in NXT, because the one where she turned on the War Games team and turned against her storyline best friend, Tegan Knox, at the time, was awesome. And they told a very long form storyline with her breaking from Raquel Gonzalez. So the work rate gets me to a great level. Like, the work in the ring is wonderful, but without the outside, you can't be my favorite wrestler. And she keeps finding herself in these positions to be in the best storyline that's going on in NXT. And as a result, once again, I'm emotionally tied to this match in a way that I'm not to most matches on NXT. This was a good takeover, but I thought they did really, really good work here. And I know there are other in-ring performers on Dakota's level, a lot of them, but there's a lot going on here, and the whole is better than pretty much anyone. Tom, I know that's probably simultaneously very specific and very vague, but hopefully you took something from it.
Yes, makes sense to me. Glad I asked. And I think the consistency in presentation, and she's someone who came in knowing what she was doing, and she's still improved upon that, and I always love seeing that. So I imagine that's probably factored into it. But the consistency of presentation, I think, is probably very important. I could talk about Edge. I could talk about Triple H in similar ways to how you mentioned that, but most recently, you know, I kept on bringing up Shayna Baszler as a favorite, and it's harder to say that as an ongoing thing, I sort of have to remind myself, like, oh, right, I love Shayna, because she's not as significant anymore. So Dakota's had better consistency, even if not at the prominence of Shayna at the peaks that she reached in NXT. But the reason I ask at this particular moment is because going into this match being, you know, like I said, very much appreciating Dakota and always looking forward to her matches, but not being as personally invested in her, it was very easy for me, and I've mentioned it on the past 2 weeks of our daily cast, it was very easy for me to say that this was going to be Raquel's match to win, or I guess I should phrase it like Raquel's match to lose, that it was a pretty easy pick in her favor, and that Kaylee Ray would be the next challenger. Skipping ahead here, I did not think that Kaylee Ray was going to show up as a post-match thing. I feel like I would have drawn that out more, but, you know, it is one of those things. Perhaps the most major thing that happened on this show that can be cited as like a, hey, this isn't just Escobar saying that he wants a match at the beginning of tomorrow's tapings with Swerve. This is a new championship program here, and maybe the entirety of it gets filmed over the next 2 days. I don't know, but it is a little nugget that the Doom Criers can hold on to. But I will agree with what Darrell said, that I really liked what Dakota did with this match. She has had some excellent matches in NXT. The ones that I particularly remember are against Shayna, against Tegan, and that was one that kind of surprised me because it felt like they were being shortchanged, but they still pulled it out. And I feel like I remember one against Candice that was really good. But this might, and of course it's just because it's fresh in mind, but as I was watching it, I was thinking this might be the Dakota Kai's best match in NXT. Because she was doing so many new things, she was going to different places that we don't see her go to all the time. It wasn't just her sequence of spots that she usually does, all the while carrying Raquel, who does, yes, still need to be carried. And, you know, Raquel is someone who has been relied on as a constant to help train like a Casey Catanzaro and that sort of thing. So she's played both sides here, but she's someone who was progressing pretty slowly for quite a while, and then she started progressing really quickly. Like, she got a lot better really fast. Maybe a lot of that is to do with the fact that she was paired with Dakota Kai. It seems like she has plateaued recently, so you do need Dakota to pull something out of the match, and she did that on top of just, I mean, yeah, I, again, agree with Darrell that on a night when nothing other than Walter and Dragunov was going to end up as the match of the night, this was definitely a second, and it's a pretty easy pick for second, I think. And you know, Raquel, she was selling the shoulder in a believable way. I think the best thing Raquel did was give me a little bit of pause as I was sitting there going like, well, I'm pretty darn sure that Raquel is going to win this. I think it's an easy pick. And the way she was selling her shoulder, it was like, okay, well, now you're making me wonder a little bit because I know you need that to hit your finish. But at the same time, that's a good angle because they always try to give, usually try to give Raquel something to overcome. And that was her thing to overcome in this match. The thing against her in this, I think, is just that she was trying to do character work, and it's been a good weekend in WWE for what I'll refer to as character selling, and I talked about that in Ilya versus Walter. I think it was just like absolute high savant level in Cena versus Reigns. I was totally blown away by what those guys did in that match. And then you get Raquel, and she's trying to do character selling, and it's basically just her making an angry face. So I didn't really believe her on that level. But yeah, that's, you know, a bunch of word vomit as to why I did think this was very good.
Yeah, Raquel is... she's a wrestler. Okay, so we go to
me,
Darrell. One more. Oh yeah, sure.
I mean, you know, I've been just sitting here for like 20 minutes listening to you guys flapping gums. No, that's cool. This was easily second favorite match of the night for me as well, for most of the reasons you guys mentioned. I don't know, going into the match, I was really hoping this was going to be Kais to win as well. I kind of got the same story that Kelly was getting out of this going into it, that, you know, this was Dakota Kais to win. I felt like, you know, she had that great heel turn, but that great turn against Raquel. And I felt like this was just really her time to shine. But then at the same time, they've really been pushing Raquel as a dominant champion. They put a lot behind her. And I feel like this run is still, even though she's had the belt a while, it's still kind of infantile. She has still more, you know, she's got a little bit more that she can do, you know, with the belt. So it wasn't like an overly surprising finish for me that she won, but man, I really had my money on Dakota Kai on this one. I do agree with what you guys said too about, you know, Raquel Gonzalez kind of still needing to be carried the match. It was really obvious to me that Dakota Kai was doing, you know, she was kind of carrying the match, calling the match, which, you know, makes sense. Her being the ring general, ring vet there. I'm not sold on Raquel Gonzalez. You know, unlike Kelly, I'm not the last one to be sold on a monster generally. Usually I'm either sold or I'm not, it's hard to change my mind on that person. Braun Strowman was somebody to change your mind. I couldn't stand him when he first showed up, and then he grew on me. But generally, if I don't like a big, you know, a big monster wrestler, that's kind of the way it stays. Raquel, I want to like her. I really do. I want to get behind her. And I apologize for the Corbin squeakies. I want to get behind her, but I do feel like she has some more work to do here to be a real believable champion and a real believable threat for me. She's getting there. And, you know, I forget which one of you guys said it. She's improved significantly in the year that she's been, you know, she's been doing this with Dakota Kai, but she's not quite there yet. I'm hoping she does get there eventually. And if she does go up to the main roster, you know, after her title reign, you know, I could, at least at the level that she's at right now, I could see her being, you know, kind of slot into somebody like that, Tamina or something like that. I'm going to stop here because we've gone a long time on the women's match, but I at least wanted to get my thoughts in.
Darrell, if you got one more, go ahead.
Okay. And being that I did go to SummerSlam the night before, that whole time, between every match, they hyped up the NXT matches and everything after every match. Doing the pre-show and everything like that. And this might not be a particular question about any of the matches. You brought up something about the changes of NXT, and I want to ask you guys something about that. I listened to the Ariel Helwani interview with Nick Khan, and he was speaking of how they want to do the producing, the lighting and everything, the look of the show, and also how people come in the show. And I know people were thinking that this might be the death of NXT, but my question would be, and based on how he was stating it, as in he wants to make it easier for people who from other atmospheres to know about coming to NXT and probably get rid of the, or not so use so much of getting indie stars to come in to NXT. He said, we're fine with what we have in the system now, who owns Raw and SmackDown as well, but trying to find other avenues. And he also said that they want to go into globalization and maybe having globalized local shows for places like India. They have their own shows. So going back to the NXT locations in all the different places, and he said he really want to focus on globalization. Could this possibly be what the change in deaf people are saying, not be as in what they was thinking and could be possibly where they no longer go after the hot indie stars and they're looking to get the Gabes and the people like that from different atmospheres and sign more of them and stuff like that, and certain hot indie stars maybe, and also look into filling different NXT areas like the UK, maybe India, Japan, and stuff like that, and then bringing them under one umbrella when they get prepared and moving them up to the NXT level, which probably show might look and feel more main rosterish with how it's looked in the design. What do you guys think about that? Because that interview was real nice and precise, and a lot of things that people were saying about him and things were totally different. So what do you guys think?
Thanks, as always, Darrell. It's what a big question. I think there are – we'll have a lot more answers 24, 48, 72 hours from this. So it feels weird to talk about it now. I think that they have made a point to get smaller and not bigger, and it is very hard for me not to imagine a lot of swipes from Triple H to Vince McMahon and vice versa, but I'm going to throw it to these guys because I'm probably too scattered on this, Nate.
I'll pick it up since Nate said his headset has briefly died. But
I didn't see that. Thank you.
That's all right. I wanted to cut in rudely and ask Darrell just briefly how he enjoyed SummerSlam, but then I remembered that I still have last night's Wrestling Night in America on my docket. I haven't listened yet, and I'm probably safely guessing that he was one of the three on-site callers that correspondents that Greg got. So. Hopefully that was a good time in person, a good, safe time in person. I know Darrell is conscious about that kind of stuff because I kind of feel like I'm on an island in having just loved the show. And yeah, sure, it wasn't all perfect, but I was really impressed with so much of what SummerSlam put forth. So it would be nice to tune into Wrestling Night in America and hear some like-minded comments, but we'll see. Maybe it'll all be more pushback, which whatever. I will move back to NXT. Yeah, so Nick Khan, of course, is being diplomatic in that interview, but everything that he said lined up with what I soliloquied about 2 weeks ago on our daily cast. And like saying we want to make it easier for people from different backgrounds than independent wrestling to get into WWE is kind of a weird way of phrasing that. But I really think that you can just look at the example of people from New Japan or Ring of Honor or, you know, where whatever other independent avenue they took, getting on the NXT tapings or NXT live shows right away versus Omari Palmer just rotting away in the performance center until Vince McMahon looked at him and was like, oh my God, why is he not on TV yet? Because he came from a collegiate background or a collegiate football background. So I think that that's the kind of thing they want more of because a lot of the people, I mean, shoot, I was just chatting about this is the very same person who I referenced when I was talking about all this 2 weeks ago. I was chatting with him again during Takeover tonight, and when I hit him with the whole like we're not going to get a roster full of Braun Strowman's line, he said like, well, you're also talking about Vince, who has not made a star out of Ricochet, and I did have to give him that one because Ricochet is someone who absolutely dedicated him to WWE's style. Especially relative to what he was doing before. And it really does confound me that Ricochet has not succeeded more on the main roster, especially when, you know, I think it was in the Money in the Bank. I'm pretty sure it was the Money in the Bank ladder match where he's the main person that you're noticing. So he's still getting used, but not in any kind of significant way. So that is
dead.
Sorry. Say that again.
I was just going to say, also dedicated himself to having no mic skills. I love Ricochet, but yeah, he's got half of it figured out.
I mean, that's fair. I feel like the discourse surrounding that is a bit harsh, and he's not as bad as he's made out to be, but that is the conversation around it, and it's not entirely inaccurate. But yeah, I guess got sidetracked myself there, but you know, I think that sort of wrestler is not as much of, like, Vince has a place for them, and it is the Ricochet spot. It is the Grand Metalik spot. But he's looking for other people that don't necessarily come from independent wrestling, where, unlike a Ricochet, they might not be able to shed certain bad habits. And I don't know, that's a whole other sidetrack I don't want to go off on. But basically, I do think what some people who are being a bit more level-headed about this are saying is correct, in that we are probably heading back to something that will look similar to the beginnings of Full Sail NXT, where it really was more like a miniature Raw, a miniature SmackDown. Yeah, due to where the outlets were or whatever decision it was that caused them to make this, the hard cam is on the other side of the studio. But it's mostly like, okay, yeah, this is how it goes. The only major difference is that there's a different guy in charge once you get the call up. So I think we are probably heading back to that. But again, I remain optimistic because of everything that I said 2 weeks ago, and hearing Nick Khan's comments today, diplomatic and awkwardly phrased as they sometimes were, I really felt like it lined up with every reason why I feel what is happening to NXT right now makes sense.
It's so funny, Tom, that they called this a return to the Michael McGillicuddy era, because they could have taken a couple of different guys from that era and made it not so scary to people. They could have called it. They could have called it the Seth Rollins or Big E era. And you and I know, because we cover this, that the McGillicuddy era is nothing to be derided. But
if you asked me who should they have put the title on that they didn't, he would be my number one pick.
Yeah, we got it when they said that they were going to go back to the Michael McGillicuddy era, and that's probably great for them, but it's horrifying to people who know how he ended up on the main roster, because they weren't watching NXT at the time. Oh yeah, you need these I don't know, 410, if you're on. We've gone off the rails, but we're gonna put you on, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, how are you? This is Reverend Keith in Baltimore.
Reverend Keith, love hearing from you. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. You guys have done a wonderful job recapping the show. I actually haven't even had a chance to see the show in its entirety. I came in and saw the main event, and I was truly impressed. I was so happy to hear you guys recap everything. You guys work well as a team, and Kelly, sorry to hear about your loss, man.
Thank you very much. Love hearing from you. Yes, thank you. I'm still off from it, but yeah, I'm getting there, and it was a good show, and hope you were interested by what you heard so far.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And just remember, prayer changes things. Now, I'm happy the way it turned out. I know that was the end of an era. I have a feeling, I just want to chime in on a few things, and I'll drop off and let you guys down. I have a feeling that Cole may, in fact, be out of the company, on his way out of the company, that is, the way the match itself played out. I would not be surprised if he ends up in AEW because of his relationship with Dr. Britt Baker. But I'm happy for Joe. He made history the first three-time NXT Heavyweight Champion, which comes as a surprise to many, but not to me, because, you know, Cross has been on Raw for the past month and a half. So I see a lot of changes there. But I do want to say this in closing. I'm happy to see that they're going back to the developmental stage and era of NXT, because I think that's when all these current stars were made, i.e. Bayley, Sasha, Charlotte, and the like. So I think that they will be able to build a lot of the younger talent whom we may not have the opportunity to see on a weekly basis. So that will give them a chance to shine. Let me know your thoughts. Once again, good job, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my call. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, as always, Rev. These changes could be so positive. And for Tom and I, who are watching these things every week on NXT 8 years back, we can see how they could be positive. But it's very hard to go back again. So there are going to be some growing pains. So yes, we on 8 years back, we're covering things like, Bayley's beginnings, Charlotte's beginnings. And these things are way more, I don't even know what word I want to use. They're more nondescript than you would have expected for people who became major stars. We just saw Alexa Bliss in her first scene, and she was not the focus. She was not named. She was just a girl who was there and was doing stuff. So it would be interesting to see NXT return to that, which 8 years ago was not that long ago. But yes, it's great, the idea of them saying that that's going to be what this company is returning to. But the wrestling landscape is also extremely different. And I just don't know if they can get away with what they got away with then, with major, major competition on the horizon. Tom.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're seeing 8 years back and what, you know, of course, we're seeing the very, very beginnings of wrestlers who were still very prominent on the brand when we picked it up very shortly after the point that we are covering week to week now. And so many of them are, yes, a lot of legacy acts, but then you factor in people like Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss and things like that. And they're maybe the majority. I'd really have to look at a roster, but I think it's pretty safe to say that the majority of people that we are covering week to week who are prominent on the show are not known for their wrestling previously. Yes, like Sasha Banks did wrestle before coming to NXT, but she wasn't known for it. Bayley, to a certain extent, sure, but then like Charlotte, she played volleyball, right? So, like, it never dreamed of it and only stuck with it because of, you know, she dedicated herself to her brother's memory, that kind of thing. So, you know, like, what did Bo Dallas do before? I mean, he didn't he, like, start in FCW? I'd have to look it up. But Bray, same thing. So on. I think that's more what we'll be looking at on the Joe and Cross thing, and whether it was a surprise to a lot of people. I feel like I saw most people saying that it was obviously going to be Joe winning because of Cross being on Raw. I still just wasn't certain. Even going into the match, I still just had no idea how to pick it. I don't know. I still kept on seeing the possibility of a giant middle finger in the form of a Cross win, like while he pins Joe and he chokes people out, but like he's choking out Joe and he's staring right into the camera, knowing that everybody's hating what they're seeing. And I don't know. I totally could have seen that happening. That was in the back of my mind. But the other thing you mentioned, Adam Cole to AEW, and maybe I had an out on commenting on it because you didn't comment on it, Kelly, but I am just trying and sometimes failing to avoid the subject of AEW on podcasts because it's just, I am so, I don't know, like I only watch the show when I have to for Torch stuff. And a couple weeks ago I had to watch a show for a Torch thing and I'm still not over it because their philosophy, their mentality, their approach, the bottomless billion, daddy's billion dollars of Tony Khan that's being worshipped by all these people just for the simple fact that they're not WWE. And here I go off. This is why I usually when I talk about it in DMs, there are a lot more curse words involved. But I so fundamentally disagree with what they are doing that I hate everything about it. And so I try not to talk about it because I am so very slanted against them in just about every way to the point that, like, there's not a single person on earth who didn't like Punk's return. I didn't watch it because, again, I don't watch that fill-in-the-blank show. But I read, or no, I listened to Wade recap what happened and recap some of what Punk said, and I could go off on tangents as to why I hated that too, based on what Wade said he said. So there's like nothing this company can do that is going to win me over. I think they are fundamentally damaged from the inside, and it is embarrassing that, I don't know, this is what happens. The subject comes up, and I just go off. So that's I'm so very slanted against them that it's like I wonder if it even qualifies as fair analysis. But on the subject of Adam Cole, I've said over and over again that I would be surprised at this point if he switched, even though some people seem to think like, well, of course he's going to switch. I just feel like, I mean, he had that private meeting with Vince. He knows he's got leverage here because he could be a name on the other company whose numbers are rising. I have said that I do kind of worry that with so many prominent people coming in over there right now, that he would go over there, be special for a little while, and then just fade in. He would just be another guy because they've just got so much other stuff they're focusing on. But even if I wanted to be objectively optimistic and feel that he could be a needle mover for them, he's got a lot of leverage, and I feel like, I know that Vince is a body guy and the size thing is such a sticking point with him, but I just feel like Adam Cole is that Shawn Michaels anomaly, and I've said it for years, and I'm not the only person who correlates him with Shawn Michaels, that this is a dude who, in like every single other way, outworks his size, his 6'1" height, to the point where you don't think about it. I never, ever, no matter who he's up against, whether it's Kyle O'Reilly or Drew McIntyre, I never, ever am thinking about Adam Cole's height because he does everything else so effectively that he isn't a small guy. He doesn't come off that way. He just comes off like a massive star who is so effective at what he does. And that is also why I worry that if he does go to AEW, again, not something I think is going to happen, but if he does, that in the mentality of what those guys put on, and a lot of the time when I use the phrase guys, I'm trying to, I'm saying it without like gendering it. It's just like, people. It's just the way I say people. But with AEW, when I say guys, I mean guys because they only have a women's division for the show of it. Just because Twitter would get angrier if they didn't. So being around those guys and guys that he does have history with, yeah, I feel like Adam Cole would be less of what he's become because he would pick up all these other bad habits and start working the way that they work and not be as effective anymore, at least from where I'm sitting. And, you know, it would still work for the AEW faithful, but that's slightly a different conversation. I don't know. I just really, really would be surprised if he made the jump. I feel like he's got a pretty good shot to prove himself on the main roster. And we'll see.
I love the tangents there. Nate, are you back? If you are, go ahead.
I am.
If not, there you are.
I am. That's what I like about being an IT guy who works from home. When one headset dies, I can just unbox another one. I'm just going to touch on the Adam Cole stuff real quick. The other stuff I kind of feel like I talked about ad nauseum last week, or well, this past Tuesday. I talked a little bit about it earlier tonight, but so Adam Cole, I'm actually leaning on the side of him going to AEW a little bit more. For a couple of reasons, Britt Baker and things like that, but I caught a clip of his Twitch stream, and I know I said this to you guys on Skype, but he absolutely promised his fan base that his Twitch stream is not going away. Now, in NXT, you can have a Twitch stream, and it's fine, but once he goes up to main roster, he's got to give it away. He can't have it anymore. So, I don't know. I can't imagine he would come out with – knowing Adam Cole and how much he loves his Twitch fan base and his followers and how much he loves interacting with those people, I can't imagine him coming out and saying that this Twitch stream will never go away if he was going up to the main roster and had to give up his Twitch stream. And I also
can't wrap it into up, up, down, down.
Well, that was going to be the other thing that I was literally about to just say that.
You know more about it than I do, so I'm interested in what you're going to say here.
Nope, that's quite all right. So that was what I was going to say is the only way I could see that happening is if they wrapped it into up, up, down, down, or they spun off like up, down, down, up, up, down, down, gave him his own type of a thing. However, it is a little bit from what he does on Twitch is a little bit different what they do on up, up, down, down. Twitch is a live stream or up, down, down, up, up, down, down. They do live streams every once in a while, but it's, you know, more of a, I don't want to say a produced show, but it's more of a little bit more of a produced show than a live Twitch stream is. So if they did that in whatever, I could, you know, that could work and all that. However, why are they going to allow Adam Cole to do that when they wouldn't allow like Zelina Vega to do it? They wouldn't allow Paige to do it, you know? And I feel like if they did something like that, it's going to just piss off so many other people that had to give up their Twitch streams, give up their OnlyFans, give up this, that, the other thing, right? I just feel like if they brought him into the main roster and they did that, that it would really if we've been hearing that there's been backstage kind of sucks right now. Everybody's kind of down backstage. The morale's down and all that. I feel like that's just going to be another blow to morale for the people that lost their Twitch stream. I'm sure they'll be happy for him. I think backstage, everybody loves Adam Cole. He seems like one of the nicest guys on the planet. I don't think they'd be upset for him. But, like, I mean, you know, if I was making a pretty decent, extra income on Twitch or Facebook, YouTube or whatever, and I had to drop that because the company said I had to, even though I'm an independent contractor, not an employee, I'd be a little bit pissed off if somebody else came up from NXT and was able to keep their stream. So I don't know. That is the one sticking point with me. And I know it's so stupid that it's Twitch, but I can't imagine that he would come out and tell his fan base that his stream is not going away if he was going to somehow lose it. So like I said, unless they wrap it in up, up, down, down, or they make it an official WWE stream, I don't know. I'm kind of in the camp of him swapping over. I've started to get a little bit more into AEW over the past handful of weeks. Kind of the CM Punk thing was one of these things that was like, all right, yeah, well, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Malakai Black, honestly, or Aleister Black for a little bit. Aleister Black's was kind of the first thing that got me interested. And then, you know, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk. I actually really thoroughly enjoyed Rampage this week. It's the first time I've watched Rampage. I think there's been a couple other episodes so far, but I really enjoyed it. It was a 1 hour episode. It was the second one. Okay. I thought it was either the second or third. I watched it with a buddy of mine who was actually my roommate when I first started watching NXT back in the day. So he's a casual fan, but both him and I were like, we actually really, really got into it. And what I appreciated about at least the last few episodes of AEW that I watched was it's not WWE. You don't have shaky cam every time somebody hits the ground. You don't have, just some of the weird WWE tropes. And of course, now that I want to talk about them, none of them are coming to my mind, but like the shaky cam is the biggest thing that I can think of. They, you know, I totally hear what Tom's saying in terms of a lot of, like, you've got a whole bunch of people running the company that are wrestlers themselves and potentially egos getting in the way and all of that. And you can't necessarily disagree with a lot of that, but at the same time, I am starting to enjoy it. And I would like to see some of the feuds that Adam Cole could have over there. I feel like AEW too is better at keeping people more relevant than WWE is. Like, we're saying, hey, Adam Cole go over there and then he just become another guy after being special for a little while. That certainly could happen. But I do feel like AEW is a little bit better in keeping the spotlight on people than Vince is. I think Vince just, he remembers somebody, yeah, and then I'm done. New toy. It's time for my new toy now. Give me my new toy. So, yeah, that's just my two cents anyway. But, you know, largely, whichever direction Adam Cole goes, I'm going to watch him regardless because he's awesome. So we'll see what happens.
Do you think Tatanka was backstage? Like, how come Shawn Michaels gets to act that way, but I can't?
Yeah, right.
Right? That's a good point. That's a good point.
I don't know. And the times are different now, and the subject matter is different. I just decided to go with that instead of any of the AEW jumping off points.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
For the sake of our listeners, because...
Oh, boy. Oh, no, yeah. I know.
Oh,
I know.
There are many, because I...
And I would like to get to bed before 2 a.m.
Yeah, we... I think they're doing some okay things, and okay is a high bar in wrestling. So,
no shaky cam is a good thing.
Is it?
I love it. It was so nice not thinking I had like vertigo or something every time I was watching the bump.
Well, my computer got all up in my face, but yeah, now we can end this show. My name is Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or spookymilk.games. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Staup on Twitter, and Grimes versus Knight was just okay.
I was going to say, Grimes versus Knight was good. All right.
I liked it, but we didn't get to talk about it much.
I don't think anybody is missing analysis of Grimes versus Knight. They wore Mega Powers versus Mega Bucks gear. That was a nice throwback.
Yes, that was
cool.
Really cool. Nate, who are you?
I'm Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT, and I already have 36 takeover 36 hits and misses up, so check it out if you want to read it.
All right. Cheers, folks. We're out of here.